Welcome to Nerds Amalgamated, a podcast that covers the latest events in science, pop culture, and gaming.
I'm the professor, aspiring game developer, sci-fi aficionado, and completely and undeniably a geek trying to take over the world. I'll be breaking down the news from tech to gaming.
I am the DJ, a humble nerd, a big weeb, and a watcher from the halls of the multiverse. Just kidding. Anyways, I'll be breaking down all things comics to movies to anime.
Join us and stay hydrated as we quench you with witty banter, unintentionally hilarious hot takes, and trivia more fun than a night at the pub, courtesy of Nerds Amalgamated. Welcome back to another episode of Nerds Amalgamated. This week we have the future of consoles, an interview with Tyler Perry on AI, and the reasons you should play video games to help your brain.
But not Borderlands.
Are you just saying that because they've released a movie trailer?
Yes, and it was a confusing mess. Very confusing.
It's a video game adaptation movie. Of course it's going to be bad.
I will say this though. Cate Blanchett in that movie, in that trailer. Oh, something weird about that trailer.
Go on.
I know, it just the look of it, just the look of the entire trailer just didn't feel right. Like Jack Black as a voicing a robot, I was like, okay, yeah, all right, sure. Kevin Hart, yeah, okay, sure. Cate Blanchett, I'm a bit weary on the whole thing. So, yeah, I mean, what was your reaction when you saw that trailer?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you poor...
I was never really into Borderlands.
Fair enough.
Although do you own a console?
Yes, I do have a console.
Which ones?
I have a PS2, PS3, PS4. I'm strongly considering a PS5, but I've been hearing some interesting news about the PS5 in terms of that it's reaching the late stage of its life cycle.
Well, you can't tell me you're not a fanboy.
Hey, I grew up with a PlayStation, so...
So did I. I've got a PlayStation 1, an original Xbox, because you can't call it an Xbox One anymore. Thanks, Microsoft. And a PS3, and I ended up with the PS3 because it was given to me by someone clearing their house out.
Yes. You still have the old PS3 games, or did you give them away?
No, I don't have any games to go with it. So I've been planning on cleaning it up and refurbing it and then hitting up secondhand stores and stuff.
I don't know if any of the secondhand stores still buy a PS3 though, but good luck.
Yeah. Anyway, that's an interesting point you come up with, that the PS5 might be towards the end of its life, which is wild because it feels like nobody's been able to get one.
What's even more interesting is how people are not buying the PS5 Pro. Which is even more weird.
Of course they're not buying it. It's not out yet. The PS5 Pro is predicted for a 2025 release.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yep. But the other interesting thing when we're talking about the PlayStations is how recently the Xbox has been... Xbox was coming out saying, oh, we're kind of lost the console wars, guys.
Well, I've never felt a need to own an Xbox because all of the interesting... games on that have come to PC. And in recent years, I've never felt the need to own a PS5 because all the interesting games on that are coming to PC.
Hmm.
So I think the consoles lost the war against PC.
Mm.
The only reason to buy a console these days is because you can usually get one cheaper than a PC, especially with the price of graphics cards these days.
Although I do feel sorry for the Xbox fanboys. I wonder what's going to happen to their consoles in the near future, given the recent news with Xbox, with Microsoft saying, oh, we're going to be doing some changes.
I don't think they're going to kill the Xbox brand. I wouldn't be surprised to see another couple of generations of Xbox consoles, actually.
Hmm.
Because they would have to recognize that it's an entry point for gamers.
Yeah.
Sure, they probably lose money on the hardware, but... it gets them into your ecosystem.
Hmm.
And then they're paying for your Xbox Live and your Game Pass.
So the battle continues, in what you're saying, in summary?
Well, I think the consoles are actually, no, I think consoles are the inferior product, because on PC you get better quality graphics and the ability to mod. I've always thought PC is better because you can actually mod.
You're just saying that because you're a PC master race, aren't you?
No, I might be a PC master racer, but that's not the only reason I'm saying that. I wouldn't be a PC master racer if it wasn't genuinely better.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
But there are fewer reasons to own a console over a PC these days.
Hmm.
And they're at the point now where they're realizing that there's no point keeping stuff locked into your console, because if you want to grow your revenue, you need to increase the number of people who have access to it. And that's why games have been going cross-platform.
But that being said, with the whole idea of cross-platforming, I can see the allure of it in terms of, yeah, sure, cross-platform, you can have like a game of Fortnite and everyone with different consoles can play it in one single match. Yeah, sure. But on the other hand, it would be a bad idea in terms of compatibility.
I have no idea what you mean.
No, I meant as in like, I'm trying to find the right words for this. In terms of one has 4K, one will have 4K opportunities, the other console wouldn't have 4K, and the other one won't have other benefits like other consoles would have. You know what I mean? Like for Nintendo.
Well,
for example,
as a game developer, you would be developing for the lowest common denominator.
Hmm.
But at the moment, the lowest common denominator is an x86 box.
What?
The hardware behind a PC, an Xbox, and a PlayStation, basically identical these days. They're all running on AMD chips, and they're not creating specialized hardware like the PS3 was notoriously difficult to develop for because it used a special CPU. Well, now they're using basically the same hardware that you can get for a PC.
Sorry to ask you this, but what's an x86 box? I'm kind of not familiar with that term.
Basically a processor that, well, x86 refers to the processor architecture. So at the moment you have the key ones, x86_64, which is 64-bit CPUs.
Mm-hmm.
They're what you find in most computers. Then you have ARM, which you find in most mobiles and Apple computers now. And there's a couple of other players like RISC-V and a couple of other brands, but they're not nearly as big.
That's true.
So when I say an x86 box, I'm referring to basically a computer.
Ah, yeah, okay. Yep, I see.
Because the underlying processor architecture is the same. But if you look at the hardware running a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox Series, stupid name, Microsoft, it is basically an AMD CPU with an AMD GPU, and functionally that's the same as a computer.
Yeah.
I can go out and I can't buy the exact same AMD CPU, but it is the same architecture. And I can put it in a computer, and there's no real reason why I wouldn't be able to run the software from the Xbox on my computer.
I know we've been talking about the PlayStation and the Xbox for quite a bit. Okay, we've forgotten the third biggest console that's been out as well, and that's the Nintendo. Are they also following the same model as well, or is it a different model for those guys?
They are a separate thing. They build the Switch on an ARM chip.
Mm.
The NVIDIA Tegra, I think it's called. So functionally, that is a mobile phone chip. And we're actually at the point now where ARM has progressed so far in the past. What's it been? About 6 years, I think, since the Switch came out. And mobile phones are now faster than the Switch.
Huh, dang.
So I would count that as something different. When it comes down to it, they are competing with Xbox and Sony because there's only so many hours in the day and you want people to buy your hardware to play your exclusives.
Hmm.
But at the same time, they're off doing their own little thing because they're running their own architecture. They they're not cross-platform except for third-party software.
So that being said, okay, how does it affect the future of the console?
I wouldn't be surprised to see consoles be replaced with a general-purpose computer in the future, with a console skin, something like the Steam Deck.
Okay.
The Steam Deck runs Linux or Linux. That's always got me, always tripped me up, because I first heard about Linux by reading it.
Hmm.
And I think, okay, it's named after the guy Linus.
Yeah.
Linus Torvalds. But no, yeah. He's Swedish, so he pronounces it Linus. And that always trips me up. But the Steam Deck is running Arch Linux. Arch Linux. See, there I go again. The Steam Deck runs Arch.
Yeah.
And then has a custom launcher built in on top of it that lets you treat it like a console. But if you want to, you can drop back to running just plain Linux, or you can install Windows on it if you want. I think that's the future of consoles.
Do you reckon I'm also seeing, like, when you look at the Nintendo Switch and the Steam Deck, you reckon we're seeing a new version of handheld gaming? Like, remember the 90s where handheld gaming was like a cash grab for a franchise, and nobody really took it seriously. But now with the Nintendo Switch...
Are you joking? The Game Boy was a great console.
Oh, yeah. That's fair. You reckon we're seeing the evolution of handheld gaming?
Well, 10 years ago, there was no way to run AAA games on a handheld because the handhelds were so different and the performance just wasn't there.
Hmm. And then we had the Nintendo DS and the...
Yeah, the DS. I love that console. So I think the PS6 and the Xbox, whatever, are going to start to converge on general-purpose computers.
Hmm.
And either you'll buy a handheld console like a Steam Deck,
yep,
or a ROG Ally or Legion Go or whatever, or you'll buy a console-style one, which will sit under your TV and plug into that and be a stationary experience, and probably come with better graphics, because we are at the point now where games on consoles include graphics sliders.
Oh, yeah.
That was completely unheard of, you know, 10, 15 years ago, because back then the games were released and would usually lock in a particular graphics setting.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, the developer would set it to get the best performance on the console and then lock it in. And I think we'll still have PC as a separate platform, but that'll be for high-end gaming. For your 4K 120 with ray tracing, whereas the consoles will be more likely to drop down to 1080p or 60fps if they need to.
See, what was interesting was when back, it used to be a thing when people would connect their PC towers onto the TV. You reckon we'll see that as a reality in terms of consoles, like becoming the next towers?
Like, that's what I'm suggesting.
You reckon?
That instead of building a custom PC, buy a console and it will do the same job.
Yeah.
Which is something Valve tried to do about 10 years ago with the Steam Machine. And I think that was a bit ahead of its time.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I see the controller. The controller looks promising.
So the Steam Machine was basically an attempt to make a console computer. And unfortunately, it didn't take off. But that controller that you see there is an early prototype of the Steam controller.
Mm.
And the Steam controller ended up being something else entirely, which I'm mostly disappointed they haven't relaunched. But, you know, they're focused on the Steam Deck at the moment. And the leaks suggest that they're working on a VR headset as well.
What's also going to be interesting is you've got, Asus has the ROG wing in terms of for the gaming side. Can you see companies doing their own version of consoles, like Nvidia do their own console, or AMD do their Radeon, ATI does their console, or...
Wow, that's a blast from the past. They haven't been called ATI for decades.
Oh, Shaday, back in the day, they used to be ATI. But yeah, could you see like gaming company, games manufacturers do their own consoles? in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see consoles become, like, even less specialized to the point where you can buy one branded with whatever brand you want.
Hmm.
We're sort of seeing that with the handheld market. You can buy a ROG Ally or a Legion Go, and they all run the same software, but they are all consoles. They're really blurring the line.
Hmm. And what I think they should do in terms of consoles, if I know this may sound like a bit of a pipe dream, can you imagine a hybrid between a PlayStation console and a Xbox Series X console? Just have a hybrid, and you create this awesome thing.
That's called a PC.
I know. But can you imagine?
On my PC, I can play Halo Infinite and I can play Death Stranding. Why would I need an Xbox or a PS4?
Right, yeah.
If I combine the two, I get a PC.
That's true. But my point is more like, can you imagine parts being interchangeable?
Well, again, that's just a PC.
Yeah, okay.
If you can take the parts out and replace them and swap them for different parts and upgrade it incrementally, that's just a PC. If you have to replace the whole thing as a unit, that's a console.
Yep. Okay, how about a new example? Let's say, for example, your Steam Deck, I can put in parts of a Lenovo Legion into the Steam Deck. Would that be...
That's more difficult because the space constraints mean that each part is specially designed. What I could see is docking stations, which is already true to an extent.
Hmm. See, the thing with games companies, I don't know whether you've been noticing it or not, but they have been trying to do this push for, okay, no physical media.
That's true of a lot of things.
Yeah, but gaming companies have been starting that push, and that's what's...
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I think media companies started that decade ago. Because we've had Netflix doing streaming for so much longer than you've been able to buy a console without a CD drive.
Yeah, but you think you reckon with the future of gaming, you reckon the idea of cloud gaming is still a pipe dream, or it's still a possibility?
Honestly, I'm completely blindsided by cloud gaming because I always thought no one would ever accept that level of latency.
Hmm.
But it turns out they do. And they can get the latency to an acceptable level. So I thought we were years from people honestly going in on cloud gaming. I was wrong.
I mean, Google Stadia was the closest we had in terms of cloud gaming.
What about Xbox Game Pass or Nvidia Now, GeForce Now? They've both been around for a similar amount of time, but they actually work.
But what failed with Xbox Game Pass? It's still going, sure, but it's more of people still use cash to buy that, don't they? Like,
I don't know why you're bringing cash into this.
I'm just trying to say is, like, in terms of my point is with cloud gaming, could you see it into Google Stadia tried that. And you're right, there is there is Xbox and PlayStation, but I think if I recall, PlayStation and both and Xbox, you have to pay a subscription fee.
Yeah, of course you do, because you're using somebody else's hardware.
Yeah, I don't think Google said anything about, I don't think Google had that same scheme, did they, for Stadia?
I'm not sure. I never looked into Stadia much because I didn't believe it was going to take off, and Stadia didn't.
That's true. But there was so much hype for that console, though.
It's just another example of why you shouldn't trust Google products.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Google does a lot of things, and they just seem to throw it at the wall and see what sticks. And if it doesn't stick, it gets unceremoniously dropped.
Yep. Okay, here's another thing to consider as well when it comes to the future of gaming. Do you reckon the game studios can keep up with the demand of console of the gaming?
Which demand?
Like I'm thinking in my head something like better graphics, for example.
Yeah, easily. I don't know why that's even a question.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I'm trying to think of something, David. You put me on the spot.
You're the one who brought it up.
I know. I shot myself on the foot for that.
Anyone would think you're the one who's had COVID. Anyway, let's move it along. Our next topic for this week is Tyler Perry's opinion on AI.
Oh, boy. So, have you ever seen a Tyler Perry movie?
I haven't, but I'm aware of them. He does a lot of movies in drag.
Yeah. And he also does a lot of, like, he's been doing a lot of horror movies as well lately. Like, Nope. I think that was his last one. No, Nope was a different movie. I'm thinking of a couple of movies that he was in. But
See scrolling through IMDb, he isn't exactly the highest rated. A lot of his original stuff is rated around 5 stars out of 10.
Yeah. But anyways. Tyler Perry, he had an interview with the Hollywood Reporter. And he was talking about how he was planning to do an $800 million expansion of his studio in Atlanta, which would have added 12 sound stages to a 330-acre property. But those have been put on hold thanks to a little thing called OpenAI text-to-video model Sora. And he said this, and I quote, "Being told that it can do all these things is one thing, but actually seeing the capabilities, it was mind-blowing."
That is a lot of money to not spend.
Oh, yeah. So this interview, he talks about it as from a business owner perspective, where he sees the opportunities and developments, but on the other hand, as an employer, fellow actor, and filmmaker, he's going to raise some alarms about this. Which is interesting. So they asked the first question. So after seeing Sora, what are your current feelings about how fast AI technology is moving? And he replies by saying, "I've been watching AI very closely. I was in the middle of planning this whole expansion for 4 years, but that's going to be put on hold after seeing Sora. And I have no idea until I saw one recently, the demonstrations of what it's able to do, and it's shocking to me."
I see he says he's already using AI.
Yep.
He's mentioned that he used AI to do his aging makeup.
Oh, boy.
That reminds me of a movie that came out a few years ago, Gemini Man.
Yeah.
It had Will Smith in it, and he was playing a cloned super spy sort of character. One of his clones had been sent to kill him, and the clone was a perfect replica of young Will Smith, done using CGI.
And another one of the questions was, so how are you thinking of approaching the threat of AI posing to certain job categories? He says, "Everything's up in the air right now. It's so malleable. The technology's moving so quickly. I feel like everybody in the industry is running 100 miles an hour trying to catch up, to try and put in the guardrails and to try and put in safety belts, keep livelihoods afloat. But to me, just like every studio in town, we're trying to figure it all out. Basically, I want to figure out all the answers. But it's every industry that AI will be affecting, from accountants to architects. If you look across the world, how it's changing very quickly. I'm hoping there's a whole government approach to help everyone be able to sustain." Oh, that's going to be an interesting answer, having a whole government approach.
Yeah, sounds like he might be advocating for something like universal basic income.
Yeah, can you imagine your universal basic income being calculated by AI?
It would probably be better than the current hoops you have to jump through to get any sort of welfare.
Yeah, that's true. But I agree with him in terms of how everybody's trying to adapt and trying to catch up and safety rails in place to try and stop AI from going awry. But you reckon that's a good idea at this point, or you reckon that's a bad idea, given, like, I think we were talking about this, the SAG-AFTRA saying yes to AI for voice acting, and now Sora being released?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a massive societal change. I know I've said that.
Yep, you have.
But I don't see how we get out of this nicely.
And he continues on as well, saying, how would you like the entertainment industry as a whole to confront this rapidly developing technology? He goes, I absolutely think that it has to be an all-hands-on-deck whole industry approach. It can't be one union fighting every contract every 2 or 3 years. I think it has to be everybody all involved in how do we protect the future of our industry, because it is changing rapidly right before our eyes. I think of all the construction workers and contractors who are not going to be employed because I'm not doing this next phase of the studio because there's no need to do it.
Yeah, that's $800 million that would be going to construction workers that isn't. But if he's got $800 million to spend, he's pretty set. So it's nice to see that he's keeping an eye out for the people who aren't.
But at the same time, it's his money, so...
Yeah, it's his money. I didn't say it's not.
Oh, yeah, fair enough.
But he's keeping an eye out for the people who haven't had a chance to make $800 million yet.
Yeah. But that line about how it can't be one union fighting every contract for 2 or 3 years, I think that's, and I think that's true. Like, we've seen that, we've been seeing that with the Hollywood strike now. Like, it's just one union fighting every contract 2 or 3 years. Even even the Screen Actors Guild had that same problem as well.
This is bigger than just one union.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I agree with you there.
This is so big that I think functionally we need to look at it from a whole society level.
Yeah. And I'll continue on. So he asks for what's the message for the industry. He goes, I know every union is individual and I know the unions have stood with each other in times of negotiations, but I think this is a time for galvanizing one voice in motion to help save and protect the individuals of our industry. I mean, we've seen that. We've seen that with the SAG-AFTRA strike. It was the writers, it was the actors, the voice actors also got involved as well. Like it was at that time, it was a one galvanizing voice in motion to say like, hey, multi-billion dollar companies, you're screwing our livelihoods here. Come on, help us out.
Yep.
And I think that push should have been for other countries, filming industries as well, besides America. It should have had a ripple effect on, Australia, for example, or Bollywood, for example, or Japanese movies, for example.
So you think it should be a global union?
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Because as you were saying, it is a big, big problem, and it's not going to affect just American cinemas. It's going to affect every other cinema industry in the world, and it's only a matter of time before that's going to happen. So, other countries' film industry should take part in this and say, "Hey, what the hell are you doing? No, let's fight." There goes my rousing speech.
Oh, no. If you're the one doing the rousing speeches, we've already lost.
So Tyler goes on. So he was asked as well. So the interviewer was asked, as a studio owner, do you feel the pressure of using AI? His response was, no, I am absolutely not feeling the pressure to use it, but I definitely look at the advantages and what it brings to the table. However, I can focus on the bottom line of my studio continuing to do extremely well and avoid the conversation, or we jump in and have the conversation head on and make sure that we're protecting all the people that are coming up. So I've got the two sides here to this thing. For me, I'm looking at my business and the bottom line, but I'm also very concerned about the people that I've trained and brought up in this industry. I'm concerned about what will happen to them. I mean,
honestly, it's really nice to see a multimillionaire having some solidarity with his employees.
Yeah, and I like how he's saying that I'm not feeling the peer pressure to use it, but yeah,
he is still using it though.
Yeah. But not to the stage where, not like heavily using it though, like what we're seeing with.
Well, it might have saved him hours in makeup, but those are hours that a makeup artist isn't getting paid for.
Yeah, yeah. It's tough for Tyler in terms of how he has to, because he's also he's a studio owner and a business person and an actor at the same time. So it's kind of like it's hard to juggle.
Yep.
So I know where he's coming from, and I think and I agree with him that you have to look at it from both sides. Unlike what's happening with other Hollywood executives, where they just look at one side and go, "Yeah, money, please." So he goes on to continue. How do you think this convergence of the rapid AI development and the current contraction of the industry is going to play out? And he says, "I think it's going to be a major game changer because if you could spend a fraction of the cost to do a pilot that would cost $15 million." $20 million or even $35 million if you're looking at HBO. Of course, the bottom line of these companies would be to go to that route of lesser costs. So I'm very, very concerned in the near future. A lot of the jobs are going to be lost, and I really, really feel that very strongly. That's true. That's actually true in terms of it's already a major game changer, and but what's gonna and yeah, sure, it's gonna there's gonna be a huge bottom line in terms of lesser cost and stuff, but what it's going to be missing is the artistic creativity involved in making the creature, for example, or the visual effects.
The question is, are most people going to care?
For the casual viewers, I don't think they'll care. But if it's like, for example, big fans of a set franchise who are heavy into the attention to detail, I think they will care. Like, let's say, for example, Professor, if in the next Doctor Who episode, they do AI, and it was the Daleks, for example, and they really, really mess it up badly. How would you respond to that?
How would I respond to an AI messing up the Daleks?
Hmm.
Well, I'd want to know who the hell wrote, like, prompted the AI. Because you can say a lot of things about the people who have worked on Doctor Who in the last 15 years, but you can't say they're not passionate.
Hmm.
So someone had to prompt the AI to get it to do the Daleks wrong. And I don't think that would be the case. I think people would step in and make sure the AI got it right.
Yeah, yeah. And finally, when asked, who needs to act, you're speaking up about this, but who else should be speaking up about this and working on this as well? He ends by saying, I just hope that the people are embracing this technology, and as companies are moving to reduce costs and save the bottom line, that there'll be some sort of thought and some compassion for humanity and the people that have worked in this industry and built careers and lives. There are some sort of thought for them. And I think that the only way to move forward is to galvanize it as one voice, not only in Hollywood and in this industry, but also in Congress. I mean, I appreciate the sentiment, but I just don't see the action in the politicians. The politicians, most of them we care about is the money.
You don't see the action yet.
Hmm.
Give it a few years. Wait for people to start really losing their jobs en masse.
Oh, yeah.
People will do a lot of things before they'll let their kids go hungry.
Mm-hmm. I mean, from this interview, I think Tyler's got he's got some good points in terms of the use of AI, how it's a major game changer, and how it shouldn't be just Hollywood that's getting involved, but it should be a more global front. But I just think that there should be more action towards it. Like, words is one thing, but actions are another thing. And we're not seeing much action. Like, even, as we were talking about with the SAG-AFTRA signing up to AI, it's like, that's going to cause a lot of ripples.
Do you want to be the one to lose your job for standing up?
That's the other problem. That's the other problem. Like, can you imagine standing up to Bob Iger and saying, "Hey, Bob, I don't like using AI on my projects." And Bob goes, "No, you have to use AI or we'll fire you."
I know, I'm just thinking about, like, do you want to lose your job because you're too busy protesting to do your job?
No, I don't think. That's what gets to me. Like if you're protesting to protect to keep your job from being outsourced, like I'm going to go into incoherent rant. I don't want to go there right now. I can't think straight on this topic.
Okay.
But that being said, all I'm going to say is it's the thought that counts, but there needs to be a lot of action to get the thought going.
Don't know how we're going to get through this gently.
Mm-hmm. I know. We can get through this gently by Pistols at Dawn. Red Dead Redemption style.
Right.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, our science topic for this week is about how playing video games can improve your attention and memory. Now, we've known that video games can help with various things for years, but it's nice to see more and more evidence pointing that way, because there has been a replication crisis in psychology, where it turns out a lot of studies that have been taken as gospel can't actually be replicated. So they studied 88 young adults, half who regularly play more than 7 hours of action-based video games each week, lightweights, to complete 3 tasks measuring their cognitive performance: a reaction time test, a task involving switching between responding to combinations of numbers and letters, and a maze-based activity. Regular gamers were able to complete the number-letter task and the maze task 13% and 17% quicker, respectively, than non-gamers. So I really wonder if this sort of stuff carries through with VR games. Because for all the good video games do for your brain,
mm-hmm.
they're not exactly doing a lot of good for your body.
And you also have to consider what's the diet that they're going with as well. Like, are they going on a huge game energy drink binge, or...
I think that would have been controlled for.
Hmm.
But you're right. We have discussed in the past how caffeine might be considered a performance-enhancing drug. So should it really be... should it be allowed?
Hmm. Also, I wonder what type of games were they playing?
Action video games, which doesn't really narrow it down much.
I've posted the journal link onto the show notes. From what I'm seeing the paper here, they're saying it's FPS, TPS, or MOBA.
Okay. I'd like to see a study to see which genre of games has the best effect.
But okay, so does this support the studies that we've been seeing for years and years and years in terms of how video gaming is good for you?
Yeah, it's another example of how playing games is good for your brain.
Hmm.
It's just not great for the rest of your body. The stereotypical fat geek is a fat geek for a reason, and it's not a good one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm wondering whether VR games would have the same effect.
Or even mobile games.
And it does make me wonder if... So they tested FPS games, players. If FPS games have an effect, VR FPS games should have an effect. So then should playing paintball have an effect?
Oh.
And that would solve the exercise problem as well. We just need to build more paintball arenas.
I could totally picture you now doing that, Professor. Like, just buying an empty bit of land and go, okay, we're going to make a paintball arena. And then
I've played paintball a few times.
Oh, I know.
It's good fun.
Yeah, I agree. I'm also reading. I'm reading the discussion bit. Some of it saying in the current study, the similar performance by AVGs and NGs on the PVT would suggest that action video gamers and
non-gamers, are you going to define those acronyms?
Action video gamers and non gamers on the PVT is.
And what's a PVT?
PVT. Psychomotor vigilance task. There we go. Which is just a fancy way of saying, oh, this is a simple reaction time test. It just measures the sustained vigilant attention and reaction time. So they would suggest that the action video gamers and non-gamers do not show differences in simple attention ability. This seemingly contrasts findings from previous studies outlining a simple attention performance advantage for habitual action video gamers compared to age and educated matched non-gamers.
Interesting.
However, when examining the test of attentions used in the studies included in this review, each test evaluates more complex forms of attention. For example, the most common test administered among the included studies in this review is the useful field of view test, which has shown to evaluate the processing speed, divided attention, and selective attention. Visual search tasks are also common, requiring attentions to shift, be allocated across the larger area than the PVT, arguably requiring greater cognitive resources. They're saying this PVT is a simple task that requires rapid responses to centrally presented stimulus and that thus may not be demanding enough to differentiate the attentional abilities of action video gamers and non-gamers sufficiently. In research on traditional sports athletes, have been found to outperform non-athletes on the PVT, and so on and so forth.
Okay, so sport has an effect on it.
Yeah.
So I would imagine then that paintball has an effect. Now, the question is that more of an effect than just general sport or being an athlete? Picking up on a lot of threads to pull here.
Yep. In terms of implications, there's some really interesting bits on this one. So they're saying in the implication, elite cognitive performance is imperative to certain disciplines, with professions such as air traffic control, surgery, military, emergency response, and aviation necessitating sustained cognitive effort in a time-constrained, unpredictable, and dynamic work environments. This work continues to highlight previous work outlining the cognitive benefits associating the video gameplay and the notion that esports athletes are elite cognitive performers. Ooh, that's interesting. Additionally, we highlight that any susceptibility of action video gamers to cognitive fatigue does not appear to differ from non-gaming population. It is important to consideration for those engaging in competitive video gaming, in particular as adequate breaks, more optimal training practices, and adequate sleep may be more important for this population due to the demands of action video gamers impose.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but that line being how it's the notion that esports athletes are elite cognitive performers, that's an interesting bit. Would you call an esports person, would you actually call them an athlete though, or would you call them like just a gamer?
That is a point of contention for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, sure, they have the same cognitive abilities, and a sports person and an esports athlete would have the same cognitive functions, and which is heightened a lot. But to call them an esports person an athlete, would this report cement that, or you reckon it's a?
Yeah, I mean, the same thing's been discussed about chess.
Hmm.
I would say that if it takes a similar cognitive load, they should be counted as athletes.
And what's going to be even more interesting is if they get classed as an athlete, I wonder how their pay scales get increased dramatically as well.
Probably not. No.
Yep. Yeah, that's fair. In terms of future direction, they're saying we highlight the advantage of eight action video gamer population on complex attention and working memory abilities compared to non-video game cohort. While many studies have been conducted to establish the association, less work has been conducted to establish the casual effect that playing action video games will have on the same cognitive abilities. That would be an interesting study to look at.
That's the causal effect, not the casual effect.
Sorry. Furthermore, we have established that engagement with a 45-minute Stroop task does not appear to hinder subsequent cognitive performance differently in action video games and non-gamers. Future work should look to more ecological methods of inducing cognitive fatigue in gamers and non-gamers, including thorough engagement with video games themselves.
So what I'm hearing is that we should be playing more games to relax.
Well, that's the conclusion. They say that, there are cognitive advantages displayed to non-gamers, thus highlighting the potential role in improving cognitive expertise. It is to provide evidence that action video gamers do not appear to display any cognitive resilience to previously established cognitive fatiguing tasks. It does, the findings does bear importance of video gaming community who may benefit from strategies to mitigate cognitive fatigue due to well-established cognitive demands of competitive video games. Now, that being said, what's going to be interesting with this study is, are we going to see a lot more people being crazy at the internet cafe and being so addicted to it that they don't go to the toilet and have very, very...
That's always been an outlier.
Really? I always thought that was a commonality.
It's a stereotype, but it's an outlier. The majority of people don't end up like that.
Fair enough, fair enough. And that's also going to be interesting. Like, are they going to... what type of consoles is going to be affected by this? Is it going to be PC gamers or is it just going to be console gamers? So that's another interesting thing to look at as well. I think this paper does support the need for esports from what I'm reading.
Okay.
And how, yes, esports, while it's very lucrative, it can also bring in the interest of people to start playing video games, essentially.
Yep. Well, moving on to our shout-outs for this week's
Oh, crap! Professor's having a heart attack! No! Professor, stay with me! Stay with me!
For this week's messed up moment in anime, DJ has picked a scene from Spirited Away.
By the way, this is messed up moments in nerddom, by the way.
Well, you've written anime here.
I know. My fault. I'll take responsibility.
You're
for that.
Sabotaging me. Early in the film, Chihiro and her parents are driving to their new home when they become lost and stumble upon an abandoned amusement park. Chihiro's parents explore the park and eat delicious food from an unattended stall. Chihiro wanders off and discovers a strange otherworldly presence. She tries to warn her parents to get them to leave, but it's too late. They have eaten so much food, they begin to transform into pigs right before her eyes.
I will say this, though, when it comes to with that tall scene. It reminds me of Jason and the Argonauts. Remember that fable where they go into the witch's island and the crew starts being guilty, greedy, and they turn into pigs?
Yeah. I wonder if there was any cross-pollination there.
Yeah, and when they meet Cersei the witch, there we go. Okay, I got a question for you though, Professor. What would you react to if your folks turned into pigs all of a sudden in an abandoned amusement park?
Probably not well. I feel like that would be quite disturbing.
I'll be like, eh? They turned into pigs. How could that be?
And our wacky movie for this week is Troll 2, which premiered in Japan on the 21st of February 1991. In this movie, a vacationing family discovers that the town they're visiting is inhabited by goblins disguised as humans who plan to eat them. The film was produced by Edward Sarlui and Joe D'Amato, an Italian exploitation film director notorious for his view that the profitability of films was more important than their entertainment value.
Gee, do we know anyone that does that nowadays?
Not at all. The entire cast went to the casting call hoping to be extras and ended up in lead roles, including few experienced actors and mostly residents of nearby towns. They included George Hardy, a dentist with no acting experience, Don Packard, a mental hospital patient who was cast and filmed on a day trip and said that he had smoked an enormous amount of marijuana prior to filming, had no idea what was happening, and his disturbed performance was not acting.
And he hadn't seen that film till years later.
Deborah Reed, who played the witch, is the real-life mother of Gavin Reed, who portrayed one of the Nilbog children. They auditioned separately, and the filmmakers cast them, not realizing they were related.
How did they not see that?
The director and his wife only spoke Italian and wrote the screenplay in poor English. On set, the actors ad-libbed their lines to make it sound better, but the director said that all lines had to be read as written.
I feel sorry for the actors when they had to do that.
Yeah. The director's wife got the idea to write the movie to express her frustration with several of her friends becoming vegetarians.
Who knew being a vegetarian was a flex?
You know, I saw a post years and years ago pointing out that this is possibly the origin of the troll face meme.
Yeah?
Because there's a scene where one of the characters pulls a face which is really similar to the troll face.
Nah, troll face memes are something else, sadly.
This film once had a 0% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. As of July 2014, it had 6% rating.
Oh, what a jump. 6% from zero. What was the saving grace for 6%?
And let's see what it's rated now. Ooh, 5% tomato meter, 45% audience score.
Are you kidding me?
So that's all we have for this week. Where can they find us, DJ?
They can find us on Facebook, X, Instagram, thatsnotcanon.com, where we have an archive of our old episodes, YouTube, where we post our videos from the episodes, and Spotify. And I'll be watching The Last Airbender show after this episode.
All right, then. I hope you enjoy that. So look after yourself, stay hydrated, and we'll see you next week.
Stay happy, stay nerdy.
Here we go.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.